Pop, can you tell us why you volunteered originally? What was the feeling that you had and that your friends had at the time when you volunteered?
Well, the feeling we had was that if the war went on, Germany won, we'd be under German rule. We didn't want that.
You actually thought that the Germans would come into
Australia? Oh, yes. We reckoned that the Germans... Well, you see, the Germans had a good holding in New Guinea and Samoa. They had a good-sized fleet here. The only thing that saved Australia from the German invasion was the two battleships, the Australia and the New Zealand. They could outrange and outgun and outspeed the German ships that was in the Pacific. So the Germans had to clear out. So they beat it off around Cape Horn. And they got back to Germany. There was the Scharnhorst, the Nische, Leipzig, the Dresden, and the Emden here. The Emden was left as a raider. Mm-hmm. The others escaped round Cape Horn and got back to Germany.
Was there any feeling for the British Empire or saving Mother England?
Oh, I don't know that there was much feeling for the British Empire. It was boosted a lot in the media. But personally, I think most of it went for the safety of Australia or just for experience.
Well, just a little bit of fun.
Yes. There's a lot that enlisted reckoned they'd get a trip to Europe and it would be over by the time we got there.
What year did you enlist?
1915.
Was that just at the beginning of the war then?
Well, no, it wasn't in the beginning. You see, the beginning was in August 14. And it was, when was it? January or February 15 that I enlisted.
So you'd heard some reports in the media of what was going on in Europe before you...
Oh, yes, we got the news from the media what was happening over there. And, see, we were in training at Liverpool. The battle at the fight at the Dardanelles opened up before we left Australia. That opened up a week or more before we left.
Mm-hmm. When you left, where did you go first?
From here? From Sydney, we went down around the Australian Bight and up through the Indian Ocean to Colombo. We went up the coast of India and across to Straits of Bab el-Mandeb, going into the Red Sea. We were bound for Egypt. We went up through the Red Sea to Suez. We disembarked at Suez and went overland to Cairo.
They say that Cairo was a pretty good place to land, and the Australian troops made quite a reputation there.
They got a reputation there, all right. Some thought they were good and some thought they were the dragons of hell.
What did they mean when they said the flesh pots of Cairo? What was that?
Oh, the brothels. There was one street in Cairo. Oh, it was only a few minutes' walk from the Shepherd's Hotel, the best hotel in the town. And it wasn't a house in the street that wasn't a brothel. It was chock-a-block, both sides brothels. A New Zealander in one of the brothels got knifed. One of the Arab bludgers knifed him. Because that started. The Australians and New Zealanders started them. And they pitched all the furniture out of the brothels out into the street and set fire to it. And when the fire engines came to put the fire out, they cut the hose. It was a hell of a shamozzle. I was in Cairo with a nurse from the Australian hospital at Heliopolis. And word came in that the boys had started a brawl down in the town. And I said to this nurse, I'll go and have a look. I went down to have a look, and there was a few revolver shots flying around, so I went back and I said, well, I think we'd better get out, there's going to be trouble. She said, what was it? I said, well, they're reading the Riot Act, and there's a few revolver shots being fired, so I think we'll be better to get out. She agreed, and we cleared out. Got back to the camp at Heliopolis. There was trams, you see, run from Cairo to Heliopolis, right into the hotel, the hospital. And when we got out there, I went into my camp, she went into the hospital. No sooner got into the camp than the bugle sounded the fall in, and they took off 100 of us for Cairo picket.
So you were called in to...
Called in as a picket then, to go into Cairo again. That transport for us, take us back into Cairo, and we had to go through the Wazza and clear all the brothels. All soldiers, didn't matter what nationality they were, they had to get out. Drove them out. And then go around the town. You'd hear a squeaky little voice calling out, picket, picket. These brothel girls, they'd got out of the brothel and they'd hidden in anything that they could hide in. Had to collect them, take them back to the brothel where they'd been in, so they'd get their clothes, get dressed, and then escort them home.
Oh. Was that your first action in World War I?
That was first action in World War I. Oh, she was a great show.
After that, where did you go, Pop, after Egypt?
To Gallipoli.
What had you heard about this scene?
We'd heard very little, only that we'd lost a lot of men making the landing.
So you weren't in the first wave?
No, we weren't in the first wave. We were a couple of weeks behind that. But we'd heard there were so many being killed and wounded and so on. A lot of them drowned, were wounded, and as they tried to wade ashore, they were wounded and then got drowned before they could get there, get them out.
And the fire earlier in the piece was pretty intense, was it?
Yeah, well, see, out of the men, the first lot that landed there, that they went for the beach. The Turks were on the beach with machine guns, and they tore into them like blazes, mowed them down wholesale. Those that fell in the water, a lot of them were drowned because they were wounded and unconscious, and they just fell in the water and drowned.
When you came in, though, the fire wasn't as heavy?
Oh, no, it wasn't. The Australians had gained a foothold on the shoreline. Matter of fact, they were up well on the side of the hills. Well, we landed there. We went from Alexandria to a Greek island called Lemnos. That's a few miles away off the shore of Gallipoli. Well, when we got there, we was transferred to smaller ships. Mm-hmm. And then from those into barges, and the destroyers towed us ashore. They'd go flat out and then swing round and cut you off, and the barges would go in the shore. There was one gun fired on us as we came ashore, and there was no rifle fire or machine gun fire. They didn't dare open up because the warships were standing off ready to give them to them if they started.
Mm. What did you feel as you came onto the beach?
Well, it's hard to describe how you felt. You had a bit of a fear. There's no good of saying you didn't. One gun the Turks had up in the hills used to shell the beach. Mm. Beachy Bill. the destroyers and the warships were patrolling up and down the coast there, only 2 or 3 miles off the coast, trying to locate where he was. Reckoned he was in a tunnel in the side of the hill. And he used to come out and fire a few rounds and then run back in the tunnel. Out of it. Well, the warship shelled it and shelled it for days. But as soon as they finished shelling it, it come a bit dark, Beachy Bill had come out and let go again. So they never ever got him.
What were the Turks like as fighters, were they?
Oh, they fight like hell. Because what people don't realise was that the Turks had been at war for years. The Turkey and Greece, Yugoslavia or Serbia as it was then, had been at war with each other for years and years. It was never without war. Well, they were good soldiers, there was no doubt about them. And they were deadly shots.
Do you think the Australians, did they hate the Turks? Or?
No, they didn't hate them at all.
But yet they were firing at them, and, you know.
Oh, yes, well, you had to realise it was, if you didn't kill them, they'd kill you. That's the point in war. You go there, you go to kill or be killed, one or the other.
What did you do when you were on the beach?
Run for the hills, quick. Yet the beach is there is covered with a scrubby sort of growth, somewhat like holly. It'd grow up about 6 or 7 feet high and thick. Mm. And if you get in there, they couldn't see you. See, when they got ashore, the Australians advanced up the hillside. They got to the top of the hill, but could get no further. They were dug in there. Lots of places, it was almost a cliff, and you went climbing up that. Until you got to the top, there'd be a bank in front of you and level ground in ahead. Well, the Turks were on that level ground, and you had to stop back here on the edge of the cliff.
Did you ever come into any personal conflict with the Turks, a face-to-face contact?
I only had personal contact with one. One old Turk came in and gave himself up as a prisoner. His Turkey finished. Turkey, no mongery, Turkey finish. Give himself up as a prisoner. There was one place we were on called Quinn's Post. There was only 5 yards between our lines and the French line, the Turk lines. We had wire netting up to stop them throwing bombs in. They had the same. And one old Turk used to call out every morning for a tin of bully beef. We used to throw him over a tin of bully every morning. As being a good Mohammedan, he were not supposed to eat it, but that didn't stop him. He ate it all the same.
But there were men there that were there for a couple of weeks, weren't they? What did they eat, and how did they get water and resupplied?
Water was brought by tanker from this Greek place, Lemnos, pumped up onto the beach at night. They had tanks there, pump it up there. And then in the daylight, the Turks used to put a bullet through the tank. They have the water run out. We lived on a 2 ounce tobacco tin full of water a day for a time. That had to do you for water, for washing, drinking, and cooking. A 2 ounce tobacco tin full. That was your ration. Because for washing, well, you got down to the beach at night and had to wash there. Salt water. Wasn't very good, but it was better than nothing.
What was the food like?
Up to shit in some places. Good in others. The bread used to be a bit stale. Been cooked about a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it's made in round loaves about that size. And they had once you got it up through the crust, inside it was quite good, but they had a crust on them just like a skin. No air would get through it. The only thing was is if they load too many, one on top of the other, they used to crack.
Oh, yeah.
And then the air would get in and they'd dry it out. But oh, otherwise they were quite all right. And the tinned bully beef, it wasn't bad. It wasn't. First stuff we got on Gallipoli, they'd been stacked on the beach for months at the finish. But when we got there, it had been stacked on the beach about a month, or a beach somewhere. And the bloody tin, all around the in the tin, on the inside of the tin was a layer of salt all round. When you opened the tin of bully beef, you took a shaving off all round the block of bully beef and throw that away. That's salt. The heat seemed to bring the salt to the surface. After you cut the salt off and threw that away, the meat wasn't so bad.
Was anyone poisoned from bad food?
Never heard of anyone poisoned from it.
Well, what did you get the dysentery from?
Flies, the bloody flies brought that there. You never seen so many flies in all your life as there was on Gallipoli. Little black buggers. You know these bush flies we have here? They were like them. And you could not eat anything in the daytime, not in daylight. You had to wait till it was dark. Then open up your tin of bully beef and eat it before the flies got round. And the biscuits, well, you smashed a biscuit up and put a bit of it in your mouth and sucked it. Yeah, I told you might be able to chew it. Some of the biscuits we had was about that square, and about half inch thick. You get a pen knife and chip round it, make like a photo frame. Put a picture in it. And some of them, you could see the weevils. I reckon some of those biscuits must have been in stock in the British Army for years before they were brought out. Oh, God, they were coming home, I think it was coming home on the ship. They dished up a rice pudding to us one day. The first one for good knows how long. And when it was brought in, I had a look at it. I said, don't eat that stuff, that's weevily. When the officer come round to know if there's any complaints, I said, yes, serious complaint. The rice pudding is weevily. He had a look at it. Turned to the ship proverb bloke, what do you got to say about it? What do you say it is? Bloke looked at him, nutmeg, sir. The officer took another look. He said, it's the first time I've seen nutmeg with bloody legs and a trunk. He said, thought overboard. He reckoned that we was right, it was weevils.
What did you think of the officers? Well, they were mostly English officers, weren't they?
No, the leaders were mainly English officers we didn't think much of. One lot that was landed beside us at Suvla Bay, if they'd have advanced, a whole brigade of them was landed there. If they'd have advanced as the intention was, they could have cut the Gallipoli right off. They could have crossed right to the Narrows. But they pitched tents and stopped on the beach, waiting orders. Smith Doreen was the officer in charge of them. By the time they got moved on, the Turks had brought up an army to face them and they chopped them to pieces. They had no hope. Our own officers were all right. We had one or two was a bit on the poofter style, but they were game.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, you know, their language, you'd put them down as poofy all straight away. Odd officers we had no time for. We had one, he was known as Jackie the Bastard. And he was a proper bastard. On Gallipoli he got shot. Shot in the thigh. Long way behind from where he was taken, he shot him too. And he got taken away wounded. When he came back, when we were on the desert, he joined the battalion again, and he struts out like a German officer. And he said, "I suppose some of you men don't know who I am." A voice from the back of the parade, "Jackie the Bastard." "Fall out, that man, fall out." He wanted to know who it was. Nobody knew who it was at all. Nobody heard anything. He realised he wouldn't get any help. He gave it away. But he was hated by everybody. And he said, "The Turk that shot me on Gallipoli," he said, "he's still here in C Company." He was right too.
But
he couldn't prove it.
Did you know who did it?
No, I didn't know. But I was in D Company, and the Turk that shot him was in C Company. He knew well enough who shot him, but he couldn't prove a thing. No hope.
When they finally withdrew from Gallipoli, without having gained any objectives, what did most of the Australians think of that?
They were darn glad to get out of there. They knew that it could never, ever be made a success of. There was no earthly hope of making a success of Gallipoli. And when the word came that they were to get off, they reckoned they'd be cut to pieces getting off.
Well, whose idea was Gallipoli in the first place?
Churchill.
What was the opinion of him?
Oh, hated. Nobody had any time for Churchill. He was looked on as a waster, a hopeless one.
Mm. Were you there at the final withdrawal?
No. No, I was evacuated before then. I was, in Terrican, some bloody fever.
Enteric fever.
Enteric fever and dysentery.
So you came out early.
Dysentery was the death of a terrible lot of men there. The doctors that we had didn't know how to treat it. The only doctor that was any good on dysentery and enteric was the Indian. They knew how to treat it because they'd treated it for years in their own country.
That battle is considered one of Australia's great battles, and yet it was a defeat.
Certainly it was a defeat.
Why is it remembered then?
Well, the only thing was, the only way it wasn't a defeat was that we eventually beat the Turk. If the Turk had beaten us, it would have been classed as a tragic defeat. But after they got them away, and the war was taken over onto the Palestine and through there, they advanced from the Suez Canal right up around the Mediterranean coast, up through Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and right up that way to Turkey. The light horse, that picture that was shown of 40,000 horsemen, that was not 40,000, of course, Australian, New Zealand mounted troops.
Where did you go from there?
We went, after I was covered in England, I was sent back to Egypt and rejoined the battalion out on Sinai Desert. We were out there for a week, and then they turned us round and took us back to Alexandria, swept us onto big ships and pushed us off to Marseilles, went to France.
This is the second part of the program covering the battles in France, end of Ident.
What was the first battle in Europe that you were involved in?
The first real big battle was the Somme.
The Battle of the Somme was considered the battle with the greatest carnage of World War I. What was it like?
Carnage was something terrific. I've seen that night, the whole sky, the whole place lit up as brilliantly as daylight from gun flashes. They'd bring up the guns at night, they'd have the positions marked out, guns would be brought up, and they'd be standing wheel to wheel, lines of them, wheel to wheel, and there'd be another line a bit ahead of them, or a bit behind them, wheel to wheel. They'd have the heavier guns further back, have them wheel to wheel. And if it was an advance for 4 or 5 minutes before they hop over by infantry, every gun that could be fired poured shells into that German line. They did the same. They poured the shells into us. But the whole sky, the whole place was lit up as brilliantly as daylight with the flash from guns.
What was the noise like?
You couldn't hear anything, only just the one roar. That's why a terrible lot of soldiers, myself included, are half deaf now.
What was the general style of battle? A barrage and then an attack?
If we were to advance, we'd shell the German front line and their barbed wire entanglement. They'd pump gas shells into it all day, and then all night, and then the next day. Well then, when there was going to be an attack, they put the 18-pounder guns onto the barbed wire and with shrapnel shells, and to chop the barbed wire to pieces.
Why did they put in the gas?
To rot the wire.
What kind of gas was it?
Chlorine. It would rot the men too. But the chlorine gas had the effect of rusting the wire away in no time.
Were you gassed?
No, I never got gassed. I was in gas, but I had a mask on.
You were safe if you had a mask on?
Oh, yes, if you kept your mask on, you were safe. Yes, I was going through heavy concentration of gas with a mask on. The first masks we had were like a sugar bag, made out of two thicknesses of flannelette with eyepieces put in them so you could see, and you pulled it down over your head and tucked it in your tunic or shirt. You breathed in and out in the same bag.
How long would you be in areas where there's a concentration of gas?
Oh, sometimes an hour, sometimes 2 or 3 hours.
But during that time you couldn't eat or drink?
No. Oh, no, you couldn't eat or drink. You couldn't smoke. That was the greatest curse of anything. You couldn't have a smoke.
Could you talk?
Oh, yes, you could talk. While he was in there, you could talk with the mask on, all right. Then the next mask they got was the one with the, you see pictures of, with the canister affair in the bag sitting on your chest. I think they still use the same thing.
Mm.
Another canister that was in the bag had chemicals and animal charcoal. Well, that's burnt bone.
Mm.
And that filtered the gas. It was pretty good against chlorine, but it was phosgene, but you had to be very careful with that. Phosgene was what they used mainly at the latter part. The first gas that was used was the chlorine.
Mm.
Then they brought out phosgene.
Did that rot the wires?
Yes, they both rotted the wire. You got hold of it, you just get it like that and give it a shake and it all fall to pieces. Rusted right through. The chlorine, it was, I think, one of the worst gases they ever used, because it cut the lungs out of them. You've got a belly full of chlorine gas, you spat your lungs out. Oh, fellas there, it took them days and days to die, but die they would from chlorine.
What was
the only thing that was in favour of the phosgene against chlorine was chlorine, you could see it. See, the chlorine gas came as a vapour cloud that you could see. It was like a fog. The phosgene and some of the others, you couldn't see them at all. The only thing you could do is smell them. Since you got a sniff of it, you're on with your mask. Wouldn't kill you instantly.
Did any of the gases burn you on contact?
Oh yes, the mustard gas would. Particularly round the crotch, under the armpits. Anywhere where skin come together.
How did you protect yourself?
Had to put this Vaseline stuff on. It wasn't a howling success, though.
When the gas attack was over and the wire was fairly well rotted through, what was it like going over the top?
Oh, it was not so bad. You had the set time to go over. The bombardment would be on and you'd know exactly what second you had to leap out of the trench and go forward. The closer you could keep to your barrage, the safer you were. But it didn't give the Germans time to realise that you were coming, and you were on top of them before they knew where they were.
Now, you were in a trench, and the Germans were in a trench how far away?
Oh, they might be 100 yards away. Well, the artillery barrage would be concentrated on their front line. And they'd give you so many minutes, or so many seconds really, from say 7 o'clock or 7:25, the barrage would start to creep. It'd lift and go further and further and further.
Toward their line?
From your line, from the German line where you were bombarding, it'd creep forward to their second line. Well then, if you were to only take the front line, it'd keep on that second line. But if you were to advance any distance, the barrage kept creeping away from you and you had to follow it up. The closer you kept to your barrage, the safer you were.
Hmm.
You used to say you wanted to lean on it, lean on your barrage, or you'd be safe then.
Now you carried a what kind of a weapon?
Only a rifle or a light machine gun, the Lewis guns.
Could you ever see what you were shooting at?
Oh, you could see them. I very often see them. If you was on a Lewis gun, You sprayed it, and as soon as you seen a sign of any of them, you sprayed it with machine gun bullets and kept going forward.
What happened when you finally got to their trenches?
Stop. Dig in. Reverse the trench.
You'd clean them out of the trench?
Yes. And see, the trench would be built so that they were the bulk, the back part of it was behind the German.
Mm-hmm.
There was a high bank in front of him. Well, you had to reverse that when you got there. You'll be looking over the low part. Well, you had to throw that back part over and put it on the other side.
Put the mound on the other side.
Yes.
So you advanced trench by trench.
Yes.
What were the trenches like?
Full of muck.
Were they fairly deep?
The trench part itself would be about 6 or 7 feet deep. At the least 6 feet. And the trench is built, you've got the wall down that way, like that. Then there's what they call a fire step.
Hmm.
About 18 inches wide. And then another drop, 18 inches. And then there'd be a couple of feet and the bank at the back. You had to have the fire step. You couldn't stand on the bottom of the trench and shoot over the top.
Well, you lived in the trench?
Hmm?
You lived in the trench?
Oh, I lived in the trench, yes.
How did they set up kitchens and things like that?
Kitchen used to come along the back. What dragged along with the mules, horses. In a battle area, you cooked everything raw right away out behind the lines altogether, behind the battle area altogether, and carried it in Dixies.
What did you have, tin food?
Tin stuff, yeah. Well, we used to get fresh meat and vegetables cooked and served out to you. Even on the Battle of the Somme, we had stews, meat, fresh meat and vegetables.
How long were you involved in the Battle of the Somme?
Oh, about 5 days.
That was you. How long did the entire battle last?
Oh, crikey. A month, at the least.
Would there have been anyone that lasted all the way through it?
No. Oh, no. Because once your unit was taken in, you'd do so many days in there and then you'd be relieved and taken out. You wouldn't go more than 5 days as a rule at the most.
Did you have any close calls?
To belly right. I got buried once, been wounded in the arm, and going back out, and another fellow with me. And we got back to where the barrage was pretty thick, the German barrage, and we stopped. And the big shell came over, landed just outside the trench and blew the whole damn lot over the top of us, buried us. Some fellows just close to us, they knew we were there, and they come to see how we fared when this big one burst. And they found we were buried, they dug us out.
You're lucky they were close by.
By cracking, yes.
What was it like in the field hospitals? Did they fix you up well?
Oh, good there, yes. Oh, I was only in the field hospital. Straight through, in and out. They dressed the wound up and give me a good dose of anti-tetanus syrup. I was put onto an ambulance and sent out. Went into a hospital in Calais. Was there for a couple of days and then put on a boat and sent to England. They had so many casualties coming in France, they couldn't keep in the casualty clearing stations or hospitals there. They had to get out and get away as quick as they could. I was only out of the house, only out of France about a month. I was back in again. Same when I got one through the ankle, this left ankle. I was back in the trenches in France with the ankle that big. The old bastard that was head doctor, he wouldn't give you much of a chance. One thing with a bullet wound, or a shell wound for that matter, it hurts like blazes at the start, but then it goes numb. And there's no feeling in it at all.
When you got hit in the arm, what did you think at the time? What did it feel like?
I knew what it was. I knew it was a bullet hit in it. But I didn't have time to stop. Mm. I kept going until we reached our objective. And then I went back to have it dressed up and fixed up. Saw a fellow there in that stunt. There'd been rain and a light fall of snow. And it was in an old railway cutting where we were. He was going up the bank to go in the attack, and the wet bank gave way with him, and he slipped back, and he came onto the bloke behind him, bayonet. And the bayonet went in the cheek of his backside here, out there in the, along the groin, and up this way, in him. The bloke disconnected the bayonet and left it in him. This was the best thing he could do. And anyway, they carried him out, and the doctors didn't bother their head about him, except pull the bayonet out. They didn't bother about him. They reckoned he was no bloody chance. So he was, when they finished all the rest, he's still conscious and didn't seem too bad, and he begged of them to attend to him, see what they could do. So they split him open, straight across, and there wasn't a damn thing wrong inside of him at all. It hadn't punctured his intestines. The vein that had gone along the flank part, the flesh part, just scraped along that and done nothing.
So they patched him up?
Yes. Yeah. They sewed him up again. He was lying in bed in this shape, his arse down and his head and his heels up. Oh, we never forgive the bugger for that, what he did there. We'd been transferred across to England, and we were in a hospital in Hastings. And there was some dame there, I don't know what nationality she was damn near black, but she was a marvellous singer, opera singer. She just came there to sing to the boys, very kind of her and all that. And this bloke was raving about what a marvellous singer she was, how wonderful it was, beautiful, oh, everything was good. She came and sang to him every bloody day. The rest of us were wishing her in hell.
Did you actually come into any contact with individual Germans?
A couple of times. Had one lot one night. Came in to surrender. That was at Pozieres. There's a few of us left in the line. We had been thinned out very, very considerably. And we'd had a full day throwing hand grenades at each other. And at the night, I was on a post, and our officer was there, and he said, there's something going on in the, out in the no man's land there. He said, can you use a Vickers gun? I said, no. I said, I can use a Louis. Well, he said, get a Lewis gun. There's plenty of them there where the crews had been wounded and taken away, and the gun left there. Mm. Plenty of guns, plenty of ammunition. So I got Lewis gun and some ammunition brought back, and he said, there's a party of them out there. He said, I can't see exactly whether it's our men or theirs. He said, don't shoot until I tell you. Anyway, he was standing there for quite a while, and these fellas came over, and one of them called out that they wanted to surrender. It was just after the Russians collapsed, you know, and they brought these German divisions from the Russian front over to the Western front, and they put these six divisions of Germans into the line against two divisions of us. And they told them they were going to have easy time. There was only Australians in front of them. They're no good. They got through us, got behind us, and cut us off. We didn't know we was cut off. We're fighting the buggers that's coming towards us from their side, and another battalion that we'd relieved had to turn and fight these lot that got behind us. Eventually they found they was being fired on by both sides, and they turned it in. Well, they had no option much.
What was the general Australian attitude toward the Germans?
Oh, it was quite decent to them. We had no real animosity against the poor beggars. One time there was on night patrol, that was at Armentieres, was in a quiet part. We were about 500 yards apart there. But they had to patrol no man's land at night between the two lines. The same lot of us went out each night, the same officer, and we used to meet the German patrol in no man's land. When you come up against them, you went towards your lines and went round them, they went round behind you, round you on their side, and never fired a shot at each other. But if you fired a shot, you brought machine gun fire, rifle fire, and artillery fire onto you. You'd be lucky to get out of it at all. So we just treated each other with respect and went round each other. Well, that went on for about 7 or 8 days. And then one night when we were out there, we run straight plumb into this German patrol. Of course, dropped down to the ground and covered them straight away. And their officer stood up and asked for our officer. He wanted to speak to him. He asked in English. So our officer went forward and spoke to him. And this German told him, he said, what I'm going to tell you, he said, I don't want you to use against us. He said, do you give your word for that? Yes, officer said, yes. Well, he said, don't trust any patrol you meet in no man's land after tonight. He said, we're being relieved. And he said, the crowd that's coming after us, not like us. So he said, don't trust anybody you meet out here after this. So we took his word for it. And good, as soon as they were taken out, you could tell when the other lot took over, the rifle fire and everything livened up like blazes.
What was the worst weapon to come up against?
Mini-werfer. What they call a mini-werfer. Mine throwers. That was up in Ypres. The Germans up there had a real love for us. They used to send us over their turds. To get the shit tin and put it into a like an oil drum.
Mm-hmm.
Put a tube down through it with explosives in it and a charge, and then fire that over. And it timed, the fuse and the explosive timed so that it get nearly to the ground when it exploded and burst and shit all over the place. Oh. We used to say it was better to get hit with their shit than their shrapnel. One thing with these mini werfers, though, you could, if it was at night, you could see it coming. You'd see it go up from the German lines, a trail of sparks going up as the fuse burnt. You'd see it go up and it'd reach the top and it'd turn. It'd go off one way or the other.
Mm.
You could always tell where it was going to go. And if it was coming towards you, well, you took to your heels.
Mm. What was the story about smashing the windscreen of the...
Oh, that was on a road in France. When we were marching along a road that was about this deep in slush, and this staff car come flying down the road. Of course, the roads in France were narrow and cobblestones mostly. No tarred or surface roads, cobblestones. And the cobblestones gave way, they pushed down into the ground and the slush came up. Well, this staff car come tearing down the road about 40 mile an hour, sending a spray of muck and shit all over the top of us. I saw him coming, I had my rifle on my shoulder, and as he came alongside, I swung my arm round like this. The butt of the rifle hit the windscreen in the car and smashed it to pieces. Went all over these Rosella birds in the car. They pulled the car up and I'd scooted. I was about 20 men further along the line. I came back and wanted to know who did it. Nobody knew what they was talking about. Must have been a stick or something threw up from the road. I knew it was a rifle that did it. No, don't know anything about it. They walked around, they couldn't identify the man that did it. They had to buzz off and forget it. And I suppose all they were doing was going for a whiskey somewhere.
How about the civilian people? Did you...
The French civilians?
Mm.
Oh, yes. We used to be billeted with French civilians when we were out of the line. They were farming right up to the... just behind the front line. There were houses and French people living well within artillery range of the Germans. They could fire right out over the farms. The French people are still there.
Did they mind having the soldiers billeted with them?
No, they didn't mind. Good for them, the soldiers did the work. We put in the crops and took the crops off for the French people. One lot had put the crop in, another lot had come along later on and take it off for them. Oh, the troops kept the French people going. And the Australians were pretty well liked by the French people, except in some places. There's one place up on the Belgian border where they were not very welcome. They'd take the pump handles off the pumps so you couldn't get water. So to combat that, we pissed in the pump. We soon brought them to their senses, though, when we pissed in the pump.